Yeah, boy, it's August 19th and it's episode 180. And this is the Fantasy Football Auctioneer Podcast. The Fantasy Football Auctioneer Podcast is the official podcast of the fantasyfootballauction.com, the only website dedicated strictly to fantasy football auction drafting. Tonight, we got a great show. We've got Mike, I wanted to say Wenrich. Damn it, Wenrich, from the Fantasy Footballers. See, I told you I'd mispronounce it already, even though we just talked about how to pronounce it. And I always
it's all good.
You can find him on Twitter at MPW270. Mike, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Right on. So just to recap, like I said, Mike writes for the Fantasy Footballers. If you go to their website, there's currently a whole bunch of articles that are posted right now, written by Mike, from things about auction nomination strategy to certain players that he finds value that finds as values to target in your drafts. Currently, Mike has been trying to get his hands on some draft data too. He's been trying to track things like how you can predict this auction U that we kind of like to call it. I've heard other people call it other things, but as well as other things like when a player is nominated, how that will affect their price. Mm-hmm. So how's that been going for you, Mike?
It's been going well. It's been going real well. I started doing this a long time ago. I've been playing fantasy football since 2004, and I've been in auctions since 2006, I guess, was my first year in an auction. And I'm a huge nerd about this stuff, and I love to just pore over the data and the information, and not so much about the players themselves, but you know, really hammering in on like you mentioned the nomination part of it. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I started to really kind of notice this trend of my home league. So I started getting more and more drafts from other people, and people that I knew I'd say, hey, send me your draft results and shoot them over to you. But I got to make sure they have the nomination order on them. Yeah. So it's, I've been tracking that. And when you guys started collecting all these drafts and stuff, I thought this is a great opportunity to try and pull some of that data. And you guys sent me two recent real drafts, and I pulled them together and found some really interesting information. And it goes right along. The history is so consistent on this. And that is, the high level version of it is when a player is nominated above their ranking on the website, they're going to be more expensive. When they're nominated below their ranking, they're going to be less expensive. Now, where that doesn't play into is I'm not looking at the website's auction values. I'm strictly looking at their ranking.
Right.
So you may see, the example I always say is we take the 10th running back and we nominate him as the fourth running back off the board.
Right.
It's most likely that he is going to be more expensive than what the 10th running back will ultimately be in that league. He'll often be, say, maybe the sixth highest paid running back.
Gotcha.
If they get nominated, the 10th running back gets nominated as running back 13, there's a very high likelihood that he's going to be a little bit less expensive than the 10th running back in the league, more like 12 or 13.
Right.
So it's a very, very consistent correlation. The two drafts that you guys sent me fall right in line with the history that I have on it. And that is the first draft of the two, 87 players were nominated below their draft, their ranking. So again, they were ranked, say, 10th. They were nominated 12th, 15th, whatever the case is.
Yep.
71% of the time, they were sold at a lower price than what their ranking should have been.
Well, that's pretty.
It's impressive. Pretty
important to pay attention to,
for sure. Yeah, and the opposite side of that is, in that draft specifically, 70 of those players were nominated ahead of their ranking. 69% of the time, they were priced ahead of their ranking then.
Wow. So,
it's not 100%, but it is so consistent that the majority of the time it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a good percentage of the time. I mean, yes, okay, we'll see. For all the naysayers, I guess, small sample size, sure. But, it is a consistent trend that you said you've been seeing over years of just looking at of your drafts and, you know, whatever. Yeah. But it, I think that it does show, and it makes sense. Like in when owners have more money, they're maybe more willing to spend it, and even on players that they might not necessarily like as much. Because yeah. I think I want to maybe credit to, it was Denny Carter. I saw a tweet a couple of days ago about people fall in love with, they have to fill their starting lineup.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Maybe this is part of that. Like, I don't have a running back. I mean, as they're nominated, they just need to see those spots filling up. And it, sometimes it doesn't matter the names. The subconscious is, I need to get a body in there just to get a sense of relief a little bit. And maybe that's what plays into it. I have no idea. I was going to follow up because we were going to talk about maybe some nomination strategies and things later on. But I was going to say, so how can a drafter then take what you're explaining and implement that into their draft somehow to gain some type of an edge on their opponents? Is there a specific way they should be doing this then? Or
what I would do, what I've done in the past, what I suggest everyone to do is, you guys talk about it all the time, of having your cheat sheet there. And it doesn't have to be elaborate. You don't have to have 15 pages or anything like that. But if you have a simple cheat sheet and you can see on that cheat sheet what that player's ranking is on the default website. So if you're drafting on Yahoo, you got to have the Yahoo rank on there. And then as you go through, when they get nominated, you just cross them off. And what you'll see is if you see a player get nominated ahead of their ranking, expect that they're going to be more expensive. So it's a, if it's a player that you really wanted, just know that you may have to pay a little bit more for them to get them. If it's a player you don't want, well, then you can just sit back and watch and know that somebody's likely to be overpaying for them, which is doing nothing but getting you a deal later on.
That's right. It's all about value, right? Yeah. Where's the value then going to be?
Exactly.
And I know we get lots of questions about guys saying, you know, and I've tried this in drafts too, trying to sneak a guy maybe earlier on that, you know, I want to throw an RB2 type player that I really like. I'm going to throw him out there early in a draft and just see what happens. Maybe I can get him at a discount. And we always kind of say, and I'm sure you know, that's the risk, right? When people have a lot of money left, you can try that. Sometimes it might work. Sometimes it won't. I mean, like you said, a lot of the times people are just going to buy that player because they have the funds to do so, whether or not they realize they actually even want them or not. But so there is the risk of that. And I think that's one thing that a lot of drafters debate with their nomination strategies. And I'm guilty. Sometimes it's just almost too boring, I guess, for lack of a word, to just nominate a guy that I don't want all the time. Yeah. And especially in a home league too, like where you've been doing it for years with the same guys, it is a little bit fun to try and spice up. And I equate it to like playing poker. I mean, sometimes you try and you have to deviate from what you normally do to try and win a pot sometimes, because the guy you're playing against right now, he knows all of your moves. He's seen them a lot of the time. So you got to try and do something different. But I mean, there also is that risk, right? I guess.
Absolutely. And you know, it comes into play. It doesn't come into play as much at the top of the rankings. You know, it's not going to happen for Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell. Maybe one of them will become the number one priced running back, and that doesn't really matter. They were going to do that anyway. And you know, I was looking through, and a perfect example here. I've got two of them from those drafts that you guys sent me. In the one draft, Jordy Nelson was nominated 12th off the board of wide receivers. Okay, which is way early for Jordy Nelson. He was ranked 40th by Yahoo. And he was paid as the 36th highest wide receiver in the league. Now, that doesn't sound like a major issue, you know, to say, oh, well, it was only four spots. But it was four spots, and it's an extra dollar or two, you know, and it just goes show that. You know, the other league, Julian Edelman was nominated 22nd wide receiver off the board, even though he's ranked 47th on Yahoo. And he was paid as the 24th ranked wide receiver up there. Now, perhaps somebody really liked him. You know, that might be the case. But the reality is it's just such a consistent result. When they're nominated ahead of their rank, they're going to be a bit more expensive.
Yeah. Well, and Edelman's a good example, I think, because he's going to be all over the map. I mean, mm-hmm. mock drafts are mock drafts. I think I read one of your articles where you said, even I was reading the comments below it, and somebody commented on one of the things you wrote. And one of the things you said was, you know, not necessarily worrying about each individual player and what that dollar value is associated with that guy in that mm-hmm. given draft. It's looking for big picture type trends and patterns and stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, Edelman to me is a good example. In mock drafts, you see him go really late, dirt cheap. And I think most of the times on these, you know, big sites, guys go bananas, spend all their money, and they got nothing left. Everybody does it too. Mm-hmm. So it's like no one has anything left.
Yep.
But in a real draft, when the ones that I've kind of seen so far, I feel like there's always one or two owners that they can't help bidding on it. And his price goes a lot higher in real drafts than it seems to in any mock draft I've seen. And I think it's maybe the allure of the Patriots, and, you know, obviously there's maybe some targets up for grabs with, you know, what's happened with personnel and not trusting Gronk for injuries and whatever. But mm-hmm. I just feel like his price in a real draft gets higher and higher and higher and higher, and right or wrong, I don't know yet, but he's just a guy that I feel like you can, if depending maybe where he's nominated, you could really see something like what you're talking about.
Yep.
Taking place. But
yeah, and that's, it depends on the league, like you said. Yeah. If there's a Patriots owner, you know, Homer in there might be a guy that has had Edelman for years and he's got to have him on his team again. There's a million and one reasons why some sure. of these prices go the way they do, but, you know, like I always do, you know, kind of take the macro look at it and say, what's the trend here? And it's a trend.
Yep, for sure. That's the best way to do it. So other than gathering this data and working on this stuff, what are you doing right now to get ready for auction drafts, or what did you do? Maybe you've done some already. What's kind of your process right now?
Yeah. So I'm always working on rankings and messing around with those, and with everything changing so much in the preseason here, it's hard, but just a constant look at the rankings on where I'm viewing players versus, again, I focus a lot on the draft platform that I'm using. If I'm playing a league on ESPN, I want to know, how is ESPN ranking these players? How is ESPN valuing them on their auction values?
That's a great tip too.
And it's amazing. It's amazing the impact that has on a draft. Be it auction or snake, those rankings, when people see it right there in their mm-hmm. face, it's such an easy thing to just go, well, I'm just going to take the top guy or the top, you know, hey, this guy's third on the list, but I like his name, I've had him before, whatever the case is.
Yep.
And they draft him. So knowing where I'm higher on a player than what the website is, then I can know that, you know what, I can probably get him as a deal comparatively to the rest of the league. If I see players that site is really high on and I'm not so high on, that's a guy that I'm going to nominate, you know, yep. early. Because the people are going to see him on the list. They're going to want to pay for him. They're going to want to get him out there. So
for sure,
that's something, you know, you guys talk about it all the time on the tiers. I'm always working on tiers as well. But I'm not some of those. And I know you guys, a lot of your tiers are pretty often small.
Yeah.
I do a lot of my tiers as a big tier. So I've got, you know, kind of my wide receiver ones. And right now this year, and we can get into it a little bit later, but
sure.
I see there's 8 wide receivers at the top. And sure, the top yep. ones are a little bit higher than those 8, but those 8 are the same everywhere you go. Almost every single website has the same exact 8 players at the top of the wide receiver ranks.
And you're talking, let's say, Antonio, Hopkins, Thomas, yep. Keenan, OBJ, AJ, Julio, and Devontae, right?
Yep.
Yeah, yep. You're right.
It's the same exact 8 no matter where you go. So
yep.
to me, that's a tier of the top wide receivers. And within that tier, you've got kind of your upper echelon with OBJ, Antonio Brown.
Right.
They're the upper echelon, and then there's a sub-tier there. But that's my wide receiver ones. And then there's a, you know, I have a huge list of players basically wide receiver 9 to 35.
Yeah.
Every website you look at, every set of rankings you look at, there is so much variation within that grouping.
Yes.
And, you know, some places you're going to see Emmanuel Sanders all the way down at 35, and another place you're going to see him up at 22. So I group that all together as those are the wide receiver twos in the league. And yep. Obviously there's more than enough that's going to finish there, but at the end of the year, everybody looks at end of year stats, and I'm a big proponent of the weekly game that we play.
Mm-hmm.
So those players within that grouping from 9 to 35 all have the ability to put up wide receiver two numbers fairly regularly. Now, where they finish in the final rankings has a lot to do with injuries and game flow and everything like yep. that. So how many of these players are able to give me multiple wide receiver 2 weeks? Who's going to give me the most? So that's what I look for within that. And then within that tier, I'll adjust my players around as I feel comfortable with them. But
for sure,
that big grouping there.
Yeah. And that's a good way to look at it too. I think, I know you're right. Some of my tiers this year, I've tried to, especially with the receivers, I've just had a hard time like mm-hmm. differentiating between a lot of them. And especially where you were talking about, like after you get past that top eight, then it's just, there are, like you said, 30 guys that could finish with 250 fantasy points, mm-hmm. for example, in yeah. out of that 30 people. So it's been tough for me to do that. So, yeah, I just trying to figure out where that's coming from. And I like what you said about looking for who can finish. And I even like to say, okay, on a weekly basis, who mm-hmm. of these guys has the potential to finish as a wide receiver one on mm-hmm. that in that given week? Yep, you know, where am I going to get that upside as much as possible, I guess, you know, not even looking at matchups or opponents. And I know Blister, our guy that is normally on our podcast, he likes looking at strength of schedule and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. and you know, he gets into it really thoroughly for that. But for sure, I think you got to go chasing that upside in that section of the draft, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some landmines along the way of different players, and it's just a matter of how you feel on that player. And when you look at things like strength of schedule, it's so hard to project some of these matchups, but yeah. at other times there's, you know, last year was a great example with Dez Bryant. And
I was
all
just thinking him in my mind. Wow.
Of all of those cornerbacks that he was matched up against. And there was probably other factors at play outside of that as well, with injuries and, you know, yep. whatnot, the way the team played, but it happened. I mean, he was matched up with some really, really high end cornerbacks. And yep. he didn't perform, you know, so that's I look at that kind of stuff. And I agree, if the strength of schedule is there and you're saying, hey, man, these guys got a really easy matchup on paper, you know, more 3 or 4 games more than this other player, push him up the list a little bit and drop that other guy down if he's got some tougher matchups.
Well, that's right. Especially when we're splitting hairs and some of those tiers. I mean, you're looking for any little edge you can use to. I guess in your mind, say, how can I differentiate between player X and player Y here? And yep. you know, sometimes it's something as little as that. It may not even be little. That could actually be a really big thing. But so as far as all the drafts or mocks that you're doing, anything, any trends that you're seeing so far? Like, what are you liking? What are you noticing? Things that you think you can take advantage of? What's some common themes here?
Yeah, the biggest thing is obviously the running backs.
Yeah.
People are going all in on their running backs this year, which is to be expected after the season they had last year. But if you go back and you look at it, that was the worst season in 10 plus years for wide receivers as a whole, as a mm-hmm. group. If you go and look at what was the cause of that, well, let's go look at the quarterbacks. Multiple big name quarterbacks were out for the year. Some of the lowest yardage totals we've had in quite a while.
Yep.
And you just look at it from an NFL perspective, not just individual teams, individual players, but the entire NFL, they threw for significantly less passing attempts, passing yards, passing touchdowns. And so it's all going to has to come back to the average, in my opinion. You're going to have Aaron Rodgers back. You're going to have Andrew Luck back. Mm-hmm. So I think those kinds of things are going to make the wide receivers, people are spending on the running backs. There's going to be deals at the wide receiver position. And I think some of the big name wide receivers are going to actually be good deals this year.
Yeah,
so that's a trend I see. I think there's a lot of good running back value to be found in the kind of the late part of the first grouping there, you know, be it the Melvin Gordon, Leonard Fournette, Devonta Freeman. Every time I look at rankings and I see him anything lower than 10, I'm just going, how are we this? He's been such a good running back over these years.
Guilty. I have him down there, but he's, I think, my running back 11 or something, but 12. But I know saying that. I mean, he's a guy that I think I want to target because
he's
going to be a lot cheaper than just about everybody in front of him.
I forget what site it was. He was down at like running back 16. And I was like, I would take him as running back 16 all day long, any chance I got.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So. Like, how can you take him over, say, Jerick McKinnon or something at this point right now? You know, like, that might have been happening a while back. Like, how can you take, you know, Jerick McKinnon over him or, you know, like, I've got him in the same tier as guys like Kareem Hunt and Leonard Fournette. And I would probably, at the price, rather take Freeman over Fournette. Mm-hmm. And I have him and Hunt. I kind of flip-flop on both of them. I don't know. I just, some of the guys that I see go ahead of him, you're right, like Jordan Howard sometimes. I'm like, I don't know. I can't, in my mind, I cannot justify what making a move like that, but.
Yeah, and that goes back to that nomination order. You know, if Freeman falls to being that running back 12, 13, 14 running back being nominated, mm-hmm. you're likely to get a good deal on him. And like you said, I'd much rather have him than Jordan Howard, Joe Mixon, Jay Ajayi, all guys that are ranked kind of near where he is or just behind him. If they get nominated ahead of him, there is no way that Devonta Freeman should be less expensive than, you know, Joe Mixon. It doesn't make sense.
Okay, so quick one, hypothetical then. If you can get Devonta Freeman for, say, mid-30s, $200 budget, we'll assume all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. or you could get a player like Melvin Gordon for 52, somewhere around there, which one would you rather take at cost then?
Definitely Freeman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saving that extra 15 to 20, we'll say. Some cases is just that much bigger. And that's kind of what I think too. I mean, I'd like Dalvin Cook. I'd like Melvin Gordon. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't mind Fournette. I'm not as high on him as a lot of other people. I'll say that. But it's the price difference. Like, if I can save $15 and go and just pretty much you're going to give me maybe Golden Tate or something like that for free.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just take Golden Tate and Devonta Freeman then.
Absolutely.
You can have Melvin Gordon.
And that's where it comes down to. I'll look at that group of running backs right there and say, whichever one looks like they're going to be the cheapest, that's the one I'm going to try to get. You know.
Oh, I agree. And that's the beauty of tiering, Gordon, right?
Cook, Freeman. Yeah. Let me have that group.
That's right. Give me the cheapest guy out of this group because they're all pretty equal. So,
And there's a very clear tier cut line right there with those players. When then it cuts down to McKinnon, Joe Mixon, Jay Ajayi, Christian McCaffrey. I like McCaffrey. I think he's right on that borderline.
I got him right there with Freeman. Like, I have them both as like those, for me, guys that could finish ahead of a lot of the guys ahead of mm-hmm. them. But like, I just am not ready to actually move them up there in my rankings.
Yeah.
But I want to take them in drafts. Like, I find when I see McCaffrey still sitting there, I'm like, oh man, I don't know. Like, I would feel pretty good still about rolling him as my RB1 if I had to,
mm-hmm.
but that's just me. I know some guys aren't like that with him, but so I guess let's just roll into this. How are you addressing an RB position? Like, what have you noticed that works good for you in terms of a roster construction and other places, or even just strategy? Like, I know I've been finding it tempting to want to go somewhat RB zero-ish because of the crazy prices I've seen at the top of the running backs. You know, where maybe Christian McCaffrey is my RB one, and then I take a whole bunch of running backs, say $15 ish in price. You know, three guys like that, and just kind of stream those guys. What are your thoughts at the position and as a whole?
Yeah, I've always been a zero running back guy. I've been drafting wide receivers at the top for a long time. So in auctions, it really plays right into my roster construction strategy to be able to go get two or three of the really high end wide receivers and then try and find some of those deals at running back. But, you know, with that being said, like you said, I'm okay with spending $35 to get a Devonta Freeman or $30 on Christian McCaffrey as my running back one. And I'm okay with that. Yeah. And there's a couple other running backs that are going even lower that for a zero running back type construction, Marshawn Lynch.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Lamar Miller is going so far down, and there's nothing out there right now that points to saying that he's not going to get the majority of the work in Houston.
I agree.
He's down there. LeSean McCoy, if we figure out kind of what's going on with the situation there, and that's an ugly offense.
Yep.
But if he's cheap, he's got a history of putting up numbers. Alex Collins is another one. I like what I see out of Royce Freeman right now. Devonta Booker is not doing anything in Denver. So he's another guy that's in that zone. And if I can get three or four of those guys for a combined $80, I'm sold. I think that's a great opportunity to do that.
And awesome.
And then, like I said, I got that group of eight wide receivers that are the premier top wide receivers. And, you know, if I can land one of the tip-top ones, Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, I'll try to do that. If it gets out of hand, if it gets into the 60s for one of those guys, I'll kick back and wait a little bit.
Right.
And getting a combination of Keenan Allen and Michael Thomas is an awesome an awesome combo to have.
No, I agree.
You know, so, and I've done a couple mocks. I've seen it, opportunities to say – you can get Keenan Allen, Michael Thomas, Devonta Freeman, and Marshawn Lynch as your, you know, kind of your starting core.
Yep.
And still have plenty of money available for if you wanted to spend up for, you know, get another wide receiver in that $15, $20 range.
Yeah. And it's funny you say, like, I have Mike Thomas and Keenan Allen as two guys that are pretty, oftentimes, I think, undervalued of that top eight group.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. So to get both of those guys, I would be ecstatic to get those. And I was going to ask you too, what's your cutoff then for one of those top wide receivers? And you said $60-ish. And I that's kind of mine too. Like, I just have a hard time, even for running backs, I'll be honest, for me, paying over $60 for any player. I mean, I get it that, you know, Gurley is going to score a boatload of points, and, you know, those top running backs for sure. Antonio Brown is pretty much guaranteed to probably do that too. So that they are worth it to some extent, but just for me, in terms of what it does to my budget, I just have a hard time going over $60 for any one player. I don't know what your thoughts are on that too, but
yeah, I feel the same way. If I'm going to do it for any player, it's going to be Antonio Brown. He's just been so consistent as the number one wide receiver in the league for multiple years in a row. And depends on your scoring. Some leagues he was wide receiver two that won one time by like 2 points. And in other leagues, he was wide receiver one. So he's been at the top every single year, and I'm willing to pay for that.
Yep.
Same goes with Beckham. I think he has, you know, as much upside of being the league leader in points. So I'm not afraid to pay for him. Hopkins and Julio are the next ones on my list for me. And I'm not quite ready to push that that high for them. If they come in at 53, 54, then I think that's a fine value for them. But if they start pushing up over to 60, I'm going to back off and hope to get down into the, you know, like you said, Michael Thomas, and even AJ Green is just being very undervalued this year. So
I feel like always he's the guy in that group that seems to be undervalued for, I guess, the eliteness, we'll say, of those guys. Like, we know they're going to be expensive for the most part. Like, you know, you're just talking about Hopkins. I would love to own Hopkins. I just can never, he gets too close to $60 all the time. I can never pull the trigger on it.
Yeah.
But for some reason, AJ Green, he just doesn't quite get the love as other guys in that group. I mean, Keenan Allen to some extent, but I know I'm a little bit higher on Keenan than others. So for me, he's always a value just because I have him as in like a wide receiver four. So, but yeah, I don't know what it is. AJ Green, if you're targeting someone in that top group, I think he's a guy that you want to look at and oftentimes is going to be a value.
Yeah.
So where are you finding then? I think since we're on what receivers, I have a feeling you're probably going to say somewhere in this receiver group. Where are you finding in drafts or just in positions or tiers, anything like that, that there's considerable value in drafts?
I think that with the wide receivers, there is a lot of value to be had with that group of, you know, Mike Evans through Emmanuel Sanders. You know, that's
30 guys you were talking about.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Yahoo ranking list right now. And that's where they've got Evans ninth and they've got Emmanuel Sanders 34th. And there's a lot of names in between there of, you know, players that I like. You know, be it T.Y. Hilton, Stephon Diggs, as you go down the list farther, Allen Robinson, Chris Hogan, Sammy Watkins, I think, has a great opportunity to really be a great value in drafts because of his upside. And he's so far down the list that, you know, if you can get him down at wide receiver 25 or 30, that's well worth it at this point. But I think there's, like I said, there's some landmines along the way too that I see. You know, I know everybody loves Juju Smith-Schuster, but he feels like the wide receiver equivalent of Jerick McKinnon right now for me, where you're getting a great player and you might actually land a guy that breaks into that top group, but I just don't know if I'm ready to pay that much money to hope. You know, I'd rather buy a known commodity. You know, Larry Fitzgerald, Demaryius Thomas, Golden Tate, they're all guys that I feel more confident in saying, you know what, I might not have the same upside, but I at least know that my floor is there.
Right.
And the floor with Smith-Schuster is a lot lower than those guys. So if I'm going to pay up for him, I'm going to pay for a floor.
That's funny because I have a hard time ranking. I agree. I mean, one, his ceiling's always capped with Antonio Brown there, right? Like, there's only so high he can probably ever get to unless Antonio Brown gets hurt. And it's trying to figure out where that is. And I agree. He's one guy that I'll probably never own. I think he's probably one of the most overvalued wide receivers for me. And I don't think he's bad. I still think he's going to be a wide receiver too, somewhere, probably low end. I have him as a low end wide receiver too. And, you know, mainly because I think that Steelers offense is going to be able to sustain two guys. So I'll levy three, you know, if you count Levy and Bell and stuff. And there's always a couple teams. Usually I think about three teams that have two receivers finish in the top like 25. So I kind of have them in that range just because I think Pittsburgh's one of those. I mean, I have, you know, most people probably have Thielen and Diggs in there too. And then I don't know, for me, it's Tate and Marvin Jones and kind of the same thing. Marvin Jones finishes as this low end wide receiver too, but, I'm glad you brought his name up because I've had a hard time trying to figure out exactly where to put him. And in most cases, like you said, I just avoid. I would rather at the same price, I'll take Larry Fitzgerald then. Thank you very much. All the time. I think he's going to have more volume. I agree. I think those are kind of the pivots that drafters need to be looking at.
Yeah. And roster construction plays such a huge part of how you build your team. And it's a lot of times that goes overlooked, especially when people are just looking at generic rankings or they're using year-end projections.
Right.
Because how these players accumulate those points is so important. Like I said earlier, you got to look at it as a weekly game. And Juju Smith-Schuster is the type of player that is likely to put up some pretty big stats, but it's also likely to happen in just a few different weeks. And in those other weeks, it might be 3 for 35 or 2 for 30, you know. So great, I got 5-6 points out of him. But then the next week he goes off and catches a 70-yard touchdown, and now that's where he's racking up his points. If okay. I've got a really yeah. consistent guy, if I've got Keenan Allen rostered already, then I'm more likely to take that kind of that player where I can get those huge blow up weeks. But if you roster Tyreek Hill and Juju Smith-Schuster on the same team, I mean, there's going to be weeks where you might set the record for most points scored in the season in a single week.
Yeah.
But there's also going to be weeks where you're going to get 6 combined points out of those two players.
And let's put Brandon Cooks on there too as the wide receiver 3. Just throw him on
yeah, something. There you go.
And just go, let's be super high variance here.
Yeah. So you got to build your team knowing kind of what that is. So if I get Tyreek Hill, then I want a Fitzgerald or a Demaryius Thomas that's going to give me that kind of steady Eddie production.
Yep. Good point for sure. Well, let's stick here on wide receivers a little bit. And I'm just kind of going to do this on the fly. And maybe we'll just talk about a couple players and just I'll throw out a couple names and you can talk about who you have ranked a little bit higher, kind of in this group of, we'll say 30 guys, kind of mm-hmm. this Mike Evans type range and down. So first two, let's go Thielen and Diggs.
Oh man. They're so hard.
Yeah. I know.
You just have to rank them next to each other.
They're close.
I think at the end of the day, you take the upside of Diggs, but it's not that much different in my opinion. So
in terms of value off the top of your head, have you seen one going for more than the other more consistently?
Surprisingly, it seems to be that Thielen is actually ranked higher on quite a few different places. And yeah, he's going a little bit higher than Diggs in some places. And I'll take it. If I can get a deal on it, I'll take it.
Yeah, like that's how I find Diggs to be a value. And if I can get Diggs for less than Thielen,
mm-hmm.
Like on our site right now, Diggs is AAV is 27 and Thielen's is 31.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to take Diggs all day. I mean, like you said, I think they're fairly even. They both kind of have low end wide receiver one potential to me. So I'll just take the cheapest guy and give me Diggs. Plus, I personally like Diggs more as a receiver. I just think he's a little more explosive. And not that I dislike Thielen. I'm just, trying to split hairs mm-hmm. here. But I just love the value there. Even though it's not a huge value, but like if I can take any kind of value, we're kind of in the same boat. We'll just, that's what we'll go after.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. Josh Gordon or Jarvis Landry then?
Oh, it's Landry by a landslide.
Yeah. I've had to move him up here now too.
Yeah. He's coming on strong. Things look like it's going to be pretty interesting in Cleveland. They may have a sneaky good offense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really coming around on just jumping to a tight end real quick, but
yep.
David Njoku has really started climbing up my ranks. But yeah, Josh Gordon has so much opportunity to be an amazing wide receiver, but it hasn't happened in what, 5 seasons?
It's,
2013 was the year that he had that monster season.
I'll say we've seen flashes, right? But then it's been just a long time away, and I don't know.
Yeah, so it goes back to how have I built my team to that point? What's the value on him? Is he the 25th or 30th wide receiver off the board? Then sure, let's see what we can do.
Exactly.
But if somebody's trying to pay him to be their wide receiver one or a high-end wide receiver two, I'm not paying that price. I think Landry has shown that he's going to be probably commanding, not near the targets that he got last year, but I don't see any reason that he's not going to go 120, 130 targets. So I think you're getting good value there, especially where he's ranked right now.
Right.
Down in the lower 20s when he can probably be wide receiver 15 or better.
Yeah, I agree. I think at the value, it's Landry. Gordon, his price seems to be coming down a little bit, but it's still too high for me. Like you kind of brought up, you know, wide receiver 25 to 30. I think that'd be the perfect spot to start thinking about a guy like Josh Gordon. Mm-hmm. Chances are, especially now with the news that he's going to be coming back, I don't know if you're ever going to really see him get that far now to this point. But yeah, so then I just kind of think, all right, I'll just let people overpay for Gordon and I'll try and get Landry at a bit of a discount as ideally. I mean, if you can get Landry as a wide receiver three, you know, and pair him with even a guy like, you know, Larry Fitzgerald to slide maybe as a wide receiver two and only out of price. Yep. I think that would be somebody, a trio, assuming I'm going to pay for one of the top end receivers as my wide receiver one. That'd be something I feel really, really good about.
Yeah, I agree. I think what we'll see with Gordon's value is kind of be like that. It's almost like the bungee jump effect. So when the news came out that he was coming back to the Browns and coming back, we're going to see it kind of hit that. It'll go down just a little bit more and then it'll start to bounce back up. So depending on when everybody has their drafts, you know, if you've got a draft within the next couple of days, Gordon might still be getting a little bit lower, but
yeah,
one big preseason game and his value is going to skyrocket right back up.
Well, that's it too. It'll be week three preseason. This is when, you know, the starters kind of play their most. Usually this could be his chance if they, I mean, I don't know. I've thought I saw something on Twitter that he can't be reinstated yet until the NFL or something okays it. So I don't know how long that's going to take, but
I think he's back with the team, but I don't think he's actually cleared to be on the field yet.
So. Right. Yeah. So I guess we'll have to see. That'll be an interesting thing to follow. Yeah. You mentioned Juju earlier as a player, you know, you just don't like his price. Any other players out there that you're probably just not going to own because of their current value?
Yeah. You know, over at the, you know, at the other wide receivers, there's some guys in that same zone. You know, whether Brandon Cooks, who knows what's going to happen there. And the players that he's ranked around, I trust a lot more. You know, even Allen Robinson is on a new team, but we've seen his opportunity. You've seen what he's done. Chris Hogan is another player that you really expect. He had a great stretch of games last year and should have, you know, probably the wide receiver one opportunities at least for the first 4 weeks and likely to carry that on through the majority of the season, I think.
Yep.
And then you got Corey Davis right there. So it's, what has Corey Davis done? Great. He has a lot of upside, but we've seen Chris Hogan do it. You know, then I see Marquise Goodwin and Robbie Anderson, you know, in that same zone, multiple spots ahead of Emmanuel Sanders. You know, Michael Crabtree is another one that's in that zone of like, he's proven what he's going to do. He's changed teams and proven what he could do. And then it's Robert Woods. It's like, how would I pay for Robert Woods when I can have Michael Crabtree? How am I going to pay for Marquise Goodwin when I can get Emmanuel Sanders for at least the same price? So there's quite a few of what I call, like I said, landmines in that zone. And that's with those guys. Over on the running back side, there's that same, you know, like, you know, what's going to happen with, you know, with Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry. Yeah. I have no idea. I don't think anybody actually knows. So you're buying on speculation. And I think buying on speculation is okay in certain scenarios, but in other times I want to buy proven talent, proven production, assuming that, you know, it's the right price point. So
yep,
I'm going to buy Marshawn Lynch over, you know, Deion Lewis and those guys.
Yep.
Tevin Coleman falls in right at that kind of same zone. And even though he's a running back too, he's proven 2 years in a row, you know, of running back 19, running back 22 in the past mm-hmm. couple of years. You know, yep. CJ Anderson is going to be a forgotten man in Carolina, but I think he's going to get more work than some people expect. So if you're buying him as a flex play or a bench running back, he's going to see plenty of volume opportunity there. So
true.
Yeah.
And that's going back to Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. Derrick Henry for me is a guy I would probably never own anywhere. And you know, again, it's because who knows, right? And if I got to pick between, say, those two guys, I'm going to take the cheapest guy all the time. And that's Deion Lewis by, at least from what I've kind of been seeing, a pretty fair margin. Mm-hmm. Like, according to our site, Deion Lewis is kind of, his AAV is $11. And Derrick Henry's is 22.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can get Deion Lewis, who at least right now we kind of expect probably to get an equal amount of opportunity, and I'm getting him at a 50% discount mm-hmm. compared to Henry, then I'm going to take that discount all day, right?
Yeah. Let me throw the question to you.
Oh,
would you take either of those players over Marshawn Lynch?
I would not.
Okay.
I would want to take Henry. I want to believe that he is going to become this, because I believed it before they signed Lewis. Mm-hmm. I thought he was on a path to potentially becoming like one of these bell cow type backs yeah. that would be, you know, in the top 12 for $45+ in auction drafts. But once Lewis went there, then to me that kind of, he had to pump the brakes pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a big Marshawn Lynch believer. I liked him going into last year. I was disappointed in how many points he was scoring weekly. And I, you know, a lot's been written on it. It seems like a lot of it was based on usage. Mm-hmm. And I want to believe that Gruden is still this old school sort of coach that is not going to be afraid to just pound the rock
mm-hmm.
if he has to. And I think he's kind of got a back that can do that if he can stay healthy. So for me, things kind of line up a little bit for Marshawn to be. And I saw that touchdown that he had in the preseason here where they called it back on a penalty, but still, I think it was like 60 yards or something. He busts mm-hmm. through and takes it to the house. And
yep.
that probably just right there solidified in my mind that Marshawn is going to be a guy I'm going to be targeting a lot in drafts. And again, he goes for about $6 a lot of the time. Yeah, I think absolutely. That price is going to go up a little bit when we start getting more real draft data. But still, if I can get him for under 10, I would probably lean that way yeah. over those guys.
I would have no problem paying between 15 and 20 for him, based on the projected volume that he's going to have. And again, we're buying a player that we know has performed in the past and we know what yep. they've done. You know, I'm looking at that Yahoo ranking list, and they have Derrick Henry as the 15th running back. Deion Lewis is 23rd and Marshawn Lynch 27th.
Yep.
And it's just
Henry still comes off the board. And again, I think it's probably, like you said, a lot of the people that are in those draft rooms are just a little bit, they're sheep to the list, to the queue that's given to them, to the little toolbar at the top that says, this is the expected value of this guy and blah, blah, blah. You know, so yep. they see that this is what the site is telling him he should go for.
Mm-hmm.
They keep clicking bid until it gets to that spot. And then, okay, maybe they stop.
Yep.
And, you know, for whatever reason, they don't have rankings a lot of the times. They're just, you know, they're bidding based on what that site is telling them. And that's why I love that point. And you said, like, know the platform you're using. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love live drafts, because there is no platform. Everybody's yes. in there with their own stuff. You got nothing to really lean on other than the rankings that you've either printed off from somewhere else or the ones that you've created yourself. And that's it. That's what you're going to go with. And, That's why I like it. It doesn't have to be complicated.
There is nothing compares to a live in-person auction draft. And if you're out there and you're listening to this and you've not done one live, find a way to do a live auction draft, because it's utter chaos, but it is so much fun. And often it's frustrating as well, because you're going to have those moments of like, oh, if I'd have just known this, or if I'd have been able to see that.
Oh yeah. Hindsight is a killer in those live drafts, but it's
intense to do a live auction. And if you got to have someone to be the auctioneer and do that for you, that part of it. But it's a completely different game than it is using an online program.
For sure. And the atmosphere and everything. Not to just, because we could probably do a whole pod just on that. But the atmosphere is there. It's however much fun, I guess, you want to make it. Like, you can do everything from turn it into a whole evening. Like with our home league, we have the luxury of having 12 guys that we all kind of live in the same area, so we can get together somewhat easily. We do like a golf little trip. A lot of the time we'll go golfing in the morning, find some establishment that'll host our draft, and then go there after and, have dinner and make a whole day of it kind of. And it's an awesome time.
Yeah, it's a blast.
I'll be honest, it's not even necessarily about playing the actual games out after. I just like the day, getting to BS with some friends that I don't necessarily get to see all the time, having a couple beverages, a good meal. And the draft itself is the most fun. Like, I got some family members that want to do it. We said, just do a best ball then. These guys aren't experienced fantasy players, so just do the draft essentially. And then they don't have to worry about setting lineups and everything. Just let it play out from there and just have fun at the draft then. And
absolutely,
that's all it's got to be, right?
That's it. Yeah. My main home league, like I said, that one started in 2007, this league. And last year was the first year that we had to use an online draft program. Over the years, people moved away.
That's it. Right?
I actually had guys flying in for the draft from like the Northeast. I'm in Florida. Mm-hmm. The majority of us were in Florida. We'd have guys fly in for the draft. And that was it. They flew in.
That's awesome.
You know, they'd fly in, say, Friday morning. We do it Labor Day weekend. Have everybody here at the house. I got it all set up. We do the draft. We order pizzas. And then we have a big party afterwards. And we're playing beer pong. And we invite neighbors over. Invite the spouses, the wives come over and hang out. And just turns into a big party of people that we just, we got kids and jobs and whatever. We don't get together like that anymore. And this is like one time of the year that we get to do it. So last year, those guys couldn't come in. A couple of them had some other work commitments and things. So we did the online, we used ESPN to do the draft, but I still had 10 of the 12 owners sitting in my living room with everybody had their laptops out, so we did it that way. Yeah.
And then you can still have the beer pong party after.
And we still had the beer pong afterwards.
Beautiful. So,
yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, no, for sure. It's all about getting together. Speaking of, I was going to think of a way to segue into this. I can't do it though. I'm not that quick, but, the opposite then, players that you aren't getting, who are you acquiring other than, Marshawn Lynch, you mentioned, maybe Devontae Freeman, are there guys you're really trying to go after then that you find you get a lot, maybe just because of their cost, or you just think they're too cheap so you can actively really attack them hard, like Marshawn Lynch? Any other guys?
Yeah, there's a couple other, at the running back position. Tevin Coleman is a guy that I love to get on my rosters. You can usually get him, rather late in the drafts, $4 or $5 sometimes. And he's a proven performer. He's got a role that he plays, and you can play him as a flex play every week. You can often play him as a running back too, if you need to. If your running back's on a bye or you got somebody got hurt, you can play him as a running back too and feel okay that he's going to get enough work to be useful. So I love to get him on a team. I loved acquire rookie running backs. You know, that was one of the things you had on the list was things that we learned last year.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something I learned last year. It was something that I got reminded of last year. And that was, you know, I've always targeted rookie running backs and trying to get, you know, a couple of them on the team. And last year I didn't get any rookie running backs on my team. And
that's the year to do it.
I paid for it, man. You know, and they, you know, you look at it and you say, well, they, some of those were expensive. Well, really only Fournette was expensive. Hunt got expensive if you had late drafts.
When you probably did, right? You mentioned Labor Day. Yeah. And we draft right at the end of August too. And I remember that where injury happened like 2 days before our draft.
Yeah.
And he sat in our draft, sat there. And I was just waiting. I'm like, okay, man, please, everybody spending their money. Good. And just hoping he would keep falling and falling. Turns out there was about 8 of us that were doing the same thing. We probably all had him circled. And as soon as he came out, I just remember kind of everybody kind of looked around like, and it got, I just don't think he was crazy expensive. He got to be probably like $22, something like that. But like, considering he was essentially free up to a couple days ago, but anyway.
Yeah. You know, there's some other, you know, rookies that are, they're a little banged up right now, but I don't think that it's going to really impact them. And, you know, Rashad Penny is falling down some lists. Sony Michel is another one where, you know, he's slipped a bit in these drafts, so you can get them at a really nice price point. Both of those players have a great opportunity, you know, week 4, 5, 6 of the season. If you can hold them on your roster long enough, there's a likelihood that they're going to take over that role on their team at some point and become the primary ball carrier. Now they're not, neither of them, I don't think, are going to become Leonard Fournette or something like that, where they're going to have 350 carries, but they're going to get enough work for the price point that you can pay for them. And these young rookies are, they can put up exciting game film and they can score some points. So I really want to make sure that I'm getting a couple of those guys. I mentioned Royce Freeman earlier. I think he is going to be the running back that we look back at the end of this year, assuming he stays healthy, and say, we should have paid a little bit more for him.
Yep.
Yeah. So I like to get him. And you pair those guys up. And again, it's all roster construction. So if I can pair those guys with the kind of those proven performers that are not so exciting, and I'm going to pay them for the studs up there. But if, you know, Marshawn Lynch and Lamar Miller, and then I get Rashad Penny, Sony Michel, you got some plenty of upside, and then you got some kind of consistent talent going on there.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're those rookies. I find myself really liking Royce Freeman. I just the things that I see, I think he can do a little bit of catching the ball too. I mean, I don't know. I was hoping to get him for cheap. I have a feeling that by the time we draft in a couple of weeks in our home league and a couple of the other ones that we're doing, it's going to be not that he'll get priced out for where I'd want him, but I know I'm going to have to pay up if I want to go and get him.
Mm-hmm.
Probably very similar to what happened with like Kareem Hunt last year, but yeah. All right. Well, let's, I'll get you out of here on one last thing then. What are one or two of your favorite early nomination strategies? How do you tackle these first couple rounds or nominations in your draft?
The big thing for me with nominations is that's your chance to control the draft for that moment. And I think a lot of people overlook the true impact that you can have with your nominations. So, you know, my big thing, the worst advice that I see out there is the nominate your kicker first. I despise that because it's like a consolation prize. Like, oh, great. Yeah. You got Steven Guskowski. So when his bye week comes, you're still going to drop him. Like,
that's right. You got a player that you don't care about anyway.
Yeah. So what did you prove? But if you can use your nominations to control the draft and control your opponent's rosters, And that's a part that's so overlooked in kind of that game theory. I have control of someone's roster when I make a nomination. So mm-hmm. if I know that there's a guy in my league that is just a Gronkowski lover, that he's going to have Gronkowski on his league, on his team every year, I'm going to throw Gronkowski out early while he's got a lot of money in his hand and while a bunch of other people have money in their hand, so that there's going to be a bidding war for him.
Yep.
I like to nominate a lot of quarterbacks in the early parts of my drafts.
Because you're a late quarterback guy, right?
I'm a late quarterback guy.
Yep.
And this year, quarterback is so deep. You know, you're looking at Derek Carr is down in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got Alex Smith and Dak Prescott. And, one of my favorite late round quarterbacks is Blake Bortles. Everybody looks at it and says, oh, Blake Bortles is a terrible quarterback. In the NFL,
he's not.
But for fantasy football purposes, the past 3 years, he's been quarterback 4, quarterback 8, and quarterback 13.
I know. Trouble ranking him. Like, I know I have him fairly low, and it's mainly because I just don't know. Like you said, when you get to about quarterback, say 17 or 18, somewhere in there,
yeah,
I just don't know where to put those guys, like who I should have above who. Yeah. Like, and I was looking at that, and I was actually looking at his numbers, Bortles, and I was like, man, I got him too low. And I just didn't know. I still can't tell who I want to put ahead of them. I just kind of, they're all so close to me. And that's a good thing, because I think if you like those guys, then you should hopefully be picking from there at some point in your draft. But
absolutely. And it's, you know, Eli Manning, you know, if you look at the rankings, you've got Saquon Barkley as a top running back. Odell Beckham is a top wide receiver. Evan Ingram is a top tight end.
Yeah.
Who's getting the ball to those guys? It's got to be Eli Manning. So for him to be as low as he is, he's free. He is free in these drafts. You're going to get him for a dollar. So, you know, that's one of my nomination things is I'm going to just get Aaron Rodgers on the board. If it comes back through and Tom Brady's still available, I'll nominate Brady. And when I can fill up, or assist in filling up the rosters of my opponents with those players, it helps me out. And it's amazing. Sometimes you get down in there and you throw out quarterback 8 off the list, and the guy who already rostered Brady bids up and now has 2 of the top 8 to 10 quarterbacks on his roster.
Yeah.
And when you see that, you're like, all right, job done here, because now that guy's done. He's out of my way.
Yep.
You know, and then you get to that point where you hit, and throughout the draft, obviously it's not the early part anymore, but when you get to 15, 16 quarterbacks off the board, you've now got your pick of the litter. You can sit there and go, I'm just going to wait to the end and take Blake Bortles or Eli Manning, and whoever has a great week one matchup, I'll just take them and see what happens. So you can control it that way.
Yeah.
Now, same thing goes with the tight end position. Those onesie positions, if you can fill up the starting spot, and like you mentioned at the beginning of this, people like to fill their rosters. They like to fill out that starting lineup. So if a tight end comes up and that's the only starting player that they haven't rostered yet, there's a decent chance that they're going to bid on them and try and fill their spots.
Yep.
So your nominations are filling up your opponent's rosters and giving you access to players at a lower price. Because now you have less competition, because they're going to look at it and go, well, I already have a tight end. I guess I don't have to bid on this guy.
Yep.
You know, so I mentioned, you know, David Njoku. If you can push him down the nomination list and have everybody filling out their roster, now you got a good chance to get him at a discounted price. And he has the upside of finishing as one of the, you know, top 5 tight end in the league.
Well, and even like with tight ends too, I like if I know Sam, I'm going to kind of stream. And say I went with, I knew I wanted a guy like Njoku, but then I had a guy like, say, Ricky Seals-Jones or something like that, that I liked that was going to be really late. I don't mind when a guy like Njoku's on the board and, you know, there's been maybe 11 tight ends or 12 or something picked. I'll nominate one of those flyer guys that I like anyway.
Yep.
And if I get him, maybe I throw him out there for a buck. and I just get them for a buck. No one else wants them. It doesn't. Then okay, so I got the flyer guy that I wanted anyway. It still takes one tight end off the board, even though it went to my roster. But then okay, no real harm. I can still go and try and get Njoku when someone else nominates him potentially later on. But
absolutely, yeah.
The last thing about nominations, how do you kind of try and end up with as many of your favorite cheap players that you like? We talked about this on our last pod that sometimes it's tough at the end of drafts. It's knowing when do you stop throwing out guys that you don't really want and start making the move to guys that, look, I want to start adding these flyers that I actually do like and not getting them scooped on you. How do you try and balance that?
That is a tough game to play, and I think it was Uncle Bucket said it last on the last show, and he was said, you know, I want to be the last guy with money, at the end of the draft, and I agree with that 100%. If I can use my nominations to fill up those other people's rosters, there's been times where I've done drafts where I've had three or four open roster spots, and everybody else is done. And then I'm sitting there going, wow, hey, nobody nominated, you know, this guy, this flyer wide receiver or this flyer running back. And you get all of your guys. If you somehow end up where you're not in that position and you are at the point where you only have, you know, $1 players available and your nomination is going to be your guy, you either have to just start putting out players that and hope that nobody else goes after them. It's extremely important to track your draft, and the online platforms do it for you. And you can look and see how many players do they still need to roster, and how much money do they have left? So
yeah, that max bid feature is real nice to have on the online stuff.
Absolutely. So if you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, well, there's three other owners out there and you know, their max bid is $4 and $2 and $3. And I don't have my tight end yet. And I look at their rosters and they all have their tight ends. Well, then I'm okay to throw out my flyer tight end. If it's the wide receiver or running back, then it's just a matter of going, okay, I don't want to put somebody out there that I know I'm not going to be happy with if I get stuck with them. So you got to put them out there. So I got a fun little story of that situation. So 2 years ago when Tevin Coleman was out there, it got down and I was sitting there looking at him and I was like, man, I really want Tevin Coleman, but the guy that owned Devonta Freeman still had money and still had roster spots. So we're going down and we're going down, and I decided I am just going to let it ride as long as I possibly can. And I did it, and I went all the way to the end of the draft, and with the last pick nominated a guy, and that other owner bid him $2 for him to take him, filled out his roster, and now it's the only guy left, and I got Tevin Coleman for a buck at the very end of the draft. You know, so it happens, and he was ranked you know, I think probably in the 30s that year. And that's the year he went on and finished as a running back too. So it can happen. You can do it, because sometimes the people aren't looking very clearly at what their list is, and they see a name and they're like, oh yeah, I've heard buzz about that guy this year, I'll pick him up. So
yeah,
it sometimes pays off to just sit and hold that guy in your pocket and just wait.
Well, that's what I said, even like it never really occurred to me, but last week when we podcasted, if I get into that position, I feel like I might almost just try and run it right out to the end of the draft and then just dump a bunch of fab money on the guy.
Yep.
Just so that I feel like I have a better chance of getting him off of waivers, where I can spend the same as anybody else, and I know I'll just spend more than everybody. Versus trying to sneak him through, and you know, risking, if you calculate some kind of odds, like maybe I only got a 25% chance of getting that guy in this draft right now. Versus almost 100%. In waivers, then screw it. Maybe I'll just go and try and do it that way. And I might even have to eat a guy that I don't even really like that much, but, I don't know. That's just something I've never really considered to do. And I thought, you know what? I might try that this year. I might just see how it goes. But
and that's one of those, you know, and going into budgets just a little bit real quick, you have to factor in the opportunity that you have with the free agent budget, because while your auction is capped at $200, as soon as the auction ends, you now have another $100 to spend. So it's hard sometimes if you draft a player for $10, there's that psychology behind it. Like, oh, I paid $10 for this guy. And it's not real money, but it's still, it's in your head and you're going, oh man, he's hard to drop. Oh, I kind of like him. If your back of your bench is filled out with a bunch of $1 guys, you can just kind of easily drop them. And that's where you can look at it and say, like you just did, I'm going to go spend some money on free agent on waiver wire the first week because I know I wanted to get that guy. I didn't get him because of the way it played out. Now I have my chance to go get him and use that money to go get the players that you wanted.
Yep. I think that's something like I said, I've never really considered it, but I think it can be powerful. Like you said, it's free money. And if you know you're going to be aggressive or more aggressive than anybody else in your league with it, then I think you can probably get most of the guys that you want, especially early. Like I said, when everybody has the same amount, you can't be outbid. I mean, by any, so you're probably going to get them if you're that aggressive. Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps it up, man. That was a lot of great info. Thanks again for coming on the pod. Why don't you remind everybody where they can find your work and what you're up to these days and how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can. All my work is done over at the Fantasy Footballers. We do try to do a couple articles a month during the off season here and in the preseason, and then during the season we write a weekly article. Everybody's kind of got their own little thing that we do each week, so it's consistent. So I can't quite say what mine's going to be this year yet, but there will be a weekly article, and typically it'll drop on a Friday afternoon, overlooking some of the stuff for the weekend. Other than that, you can find me on Twitter, MPW270. And I love talking about fantasy football and especially auction drafts. So if you got any questions, don't be afraid. Shoot me a message and I'll glad to talk.
Awesome. All right. Thanks again, Mike, for coming on. Thanks to all you guys for listening. If you got any questions coming up here with your drafts, you know where to find us on Twitter at Fantasy Auction. Other than that, we'll see you guys all again next week.